Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me? Yep. Well, I've moved on in the level of anointing now that I am able to use this. So we'll see how that works out in practice. I want to just pose a few questions to you as we kick off. Why are you here today? I am not trying to get rid of any of you, but all of you are here today, unless you're on the podcast, and you made a decision to come to church, right? So what is it that motivated you? Is it habit or tradition, just what you do on a Sunday morning? Is it to see friends? Is it to take advantage of the free childcare or the free coffee? These are just things just to get you thinking, just as you start off. And the next question, what is the church? Nice, simple, easy question, which I'm going to try and tackle today. And then what is the future of the church in the new creation? What is the future of the church in the new creation? And there's different levels. Oh, so yeah, this, my slides are in a slightly different order. So we've been looking at this series of work and the new creation. So some of you are already thinking, what is Matt doing talking about church? Because we're supposed to be in the middle of a sermon series about work. And we are going to be pivoting in the second half of this series. We've primarily been focusing on work, looking at what the new creation and our understanding of that means for our work. But we're going to be moving increasingly as we go forward to think about the repercussions for the church and for our communities. Because if you understand the new creation properly, what God is going to do in the future when Jesus comes back, then that impacts everything, not just our individual work lives. So you've got, think of it like a wall or a building. You've got different levels of understanding of church. You know, the most basic level of understanding, church is just a building. Which case, what are we? Because we don't own this building. But a lot of people out there in the world would say church is a building. When the church is locked, the church doesn't exist anymore. You can't get into it because it's just a building. That's the most basic level. Then you could say, well, church is a social club. So I go to the bingo, I go to the cricket, I go to wherever, and I go to church. So that's just my thing that I do on a Sunday. It's a social club like any other. Then slightly higher, you say, well, it's actually a religious activity. So you go and you sing songs, you perform ceremonies, you do rituals, you do religious activities, and that's a spiritual exercise. That's kind of really just the same as a social club, but with some added religious elements, right? Then you could say, well, church is actually a spiritual experience. So we're coming to have a relationship with God. We want to encounter him, but we're doing that as individuals. Now that's better, because at least we've got a relationship with God now, right? But we're still primarily individuals when we do it. And then you've got a higher level, which is you say, well, church is a worshiping community. We're here to worship God and encounter him, and we do it as a community, but the focus is on the spiritual. Now, that's a pretty decent definition, I would say, but I would say it's not what I want to bring to you today. I think there's another level on our wall that I want to bring to you today. And I would just say, just have a little bit of an open mind. Some of the stuff I'm bringing today, you might be like, ooh, I don't know about this. Or it might be a bit new to you. I would say just have an open mind and we'll see what God does. So I'm going to do a whistle-stop tour through the Bible. And this is going to be a summary. It's going to be an introduction. It is not going to be conclusive. There is so much more that you can say. I'm going to skim through, and that is deliberate, because we're looking at the big picture of what church is. But there's going to be some themes and some threads that I want to pick through as we look. One of them is family, the idea that church is the family of God. Another one is relationships, the relationships were broken with the fall, and that we have restored relationships in the church. And then the last one is community and belonging. So as we go through, just be keeping an eye out, and hopefully I'll be able to draw your attention to these things in the passages we're going to look at today. And we've been looking at this concept of the U-shape to history, that God started creating in goodness, that through the fall, we went down, 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 and things got really bad. Our relationship with God was broken. Through the cross, we're redeemed. We're brought into right relationship with God, and that we're on now the upward trajectory where things aren't yet as God wants them to be, but in the future, God will make all things the way he wants. He'll get rid of sin and death forever. So I want to think, how does the church fit into this pattern? Okay, we're going to start at the very beginning. Very good place to start if you are a Sound of Music fan. And, oh wow, didn't expect that. In the beginning, we have the Garden of Eden, and Adam is there in the garden in paradise. He has got everything that he needs except for one thing. He is in the garden, but there is a problem. Now, some of you already are thinking, oh, what's going on here? There is a problem. And even though he has perfect relationship with God and with his surrounding environment, there is still a problem. And you see it in Genesis 2:18. It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. The problem is isolation. Even without sin or death, the problem is isolation. And Adam needs someone to do life with him. He needs community. And God's solution to isolation is community. So he gives Adam Eve. Now, unfortunately, we then have the fall. They have one job, don't eat the fruit. What do? They eat the fruit. And so we go on the downward trajectory of the U-shape. And so we end up with broken relationships between humanity and God, broken relationships between humanity and our environment, and we see that in climate change and so many other things. But also, and this is what I want you to see, broken relationships between human beings. In comes jealousy and greed and backbiting and insults and resentment and all of the lovely things which fill up our social media screens and that we experience in our workplaces and our families and every other place, because there is a curse in the relationships between human beings. And we see that as we play on the story. Adam and Eve get caught, and look how Adam responds. He gets busted by God, and look how he responds. The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree, and I ate it. And Adam becomes the first husband in history to blame his wife for something that he was responsible for, that he got wrong, which I'm sure has never happened since. And so Adam has done something wrong. What does he do? He blames Eve. And so you end up with a breakdown in human relationships. They have two sons. And again, the relationship, the sibling relationship, which God intended to be a place of strength and support, one ends up murdering the other. All of this brokenness comes into family relationships. And some of you, family is like a difficult concept. It's not an easy concept. It wasn't an easy concept for Adam and Eve. And it's worth just acknowledging that. But in the family of God, we don't stay in the place of brokenness and despair. Thankfully, we move on. And one image, you can look at it like, it's like a scrum. I don't really know much about rugby, but in the scrum, you are alongside one another, right? You are together. And then if the scrum falls apart, that's when all chaos breaks loose. I don't really know much about rugby. But I thought we could just leave it at that. But I thought, let's make it more specific. Let's make it about the South African national rugby team. Now, in 2015, there was the Rugby World Cup. And South Africa went up against Japan, who I think had recently discovered rugby that year. And they had one of the most humiliating defeats in the history of rugby. Why am I bringing this up? Well, Rowan was preaching a few weeks ago, and out of nowhere went into an unprovoked, unnecessary, unjustified attack upon my football team, Manchester United. And I told Rowan, I'm preaching in a few weeks' time, and here we are. But actually, this is a perfect illustration of the fall. Rowan attacks me, I attack Rowan, and then Leslie ends up getting offended. And the cycle continues, okay? I love you too, Rowan. Thankfully, we don't stay there. So I want us to look at Genesis 12 next, because this is where God begins to turn the tide. And he goes to someone called Abraham. He wants to break this cycle of human relationships being a negative, and he calls him. So in Genesis 12, the Lord had said to Abraham, go from your country, your people, and your father's household, I will show you to the land I will show you. I'll make you into a great nation. I'll bless you. I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. Whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. One thing to notice from here, it's not specifically in that text, but the way in which God will do that and turn Abraham into a great nation is through family. He's going to have children. Those children are going to have children, and they're going to multiply, and they're going to turn into a nation. And the story of the Old Testament is the story of the relationship between God and his people. And it starts through family. The other thing I want you to notice is, if you look at verse 3, all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. This is never meant to be a cozy little club of the in crowd. This is always meant to be, I will bless Abraham, I'll bless the people of God, and that blessing is meant to spread out to all of the people in the surrounding nations. It's not meant to be the blessing just kept in the church or kept in the nation of Israel. It's always meant to flow out. So when we get to the New Testament, we get the church. And if you think, Jesus could have been a lone operator, right? Jesus didn't need anybody, but he chose to call his 12 disciples. He called people like Zacchaeus. He called people like Mary Magdalene and this ragtag group of people who had nothing to do with each other other than Jesus were brought into a community. They were brought into a family. And I want us to look at Acts chapter 2 because that's just like a snapshot of what life was like in the early church. So let's read together Acts 2. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Now I want us just to zoom in on verse 42. I don't know if you would say, what are the ingredients that are key to a church? The things that you say, these are the building blocks for a church. These are the four things that they were devoted to, that they were committed to. The apostles' teaching, which would go on to become the New Testament. So they're devoted to the Bible. Most people wouldn't argue with that. They were devoted to prayer. Again, most people wouldn't argue with that in a church. They were devoted to breaking bread. So remembering the death of Jesus was important from the very beginning. And then they were devoted to fellowship. And this is where I kind of take issue very slightly with some of our Bible translating friends, because we end up taking a Greek word we don't understand and we replace it with an English word we don't understand, or at least which I don't understand. So what is fellowship? They were devoted to one another's company. They were devoted to spending time together. They were devoted to hanging out. They were devoted to sharing food together. They were devoted to sharing their lives with each other. They were devoted to one another. That's what it means when it talks about fellowship. And you can see it in how they spent their time. There's nothing here, and this is again controversial, about a Sunday service. But they met together in the temple courts, in one another's homes every day. Now we have work, so that's not necessarily going to be feasible for all of us. But they met together regularly, and this was not another item on their to-do list. This was not something that they wanted to do when they got round to it. This was a fundamental part of what their spiritual lives were. This was their everyday experience. And you can see it in verse 47 there. The Lord added to their number those who were being saved. It flowed outwards into the people around them in their communities. Excuse me. Okay, so we are almost there. New creation. I said that we would look at new creation and the future of the church. And I want us to look at the book of Revelation, which we've been singing about today, which Julian has been sharing with us. And the thing to know about the book of Revelation is it's actually a letter to seven churches. It isn't just some prophecy that John had when he had a dodgy vindaloo or something like that, and he had these strange visions. It is actually written to the first century church. And the vision that John has of the end of time, when Jesus comes back, when we have resurrection from the dead, is actually intensely communal. He describes it as being like a wedding feast. What do you have at a wedding? Okay, not during COVID, I appreciate, but you have many people, many, many people coming together. You have a feast, you have a celebration, you have community. So let's look at Revelation 21. And we've referred to this in this series already, but let's just look at this again. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them." It's okay, it's a location. You've got a city, and you've got a heaven and an earth. But those places, it's not a location primarily, as much as it is a space for God to dwell with the angels. No, his people. That's what it is. It's a space for him to dwell with his people. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and will be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. You see how everything there, when it talks about people, is in the plural? How we often think, or how I hear it described when we talk about heaven, is that it's going to be me and Jesus are going to be face to face, and it's going to be the most amazing, personal, individual time of worship where I can have worship with Jesus by myself. You see, that's great, but it's not in the Bible. It's community. It's group language. It's people coming together. Look at verse 7. Those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I will be their God, and they will be my children. Family language, community language. And then John sees a tree. And what is the tree for? The healing of the nations. What are nations? They're groups of millions of people. This is not a private party. So one of the things immediately when I think, what does this mean for the church and how we think about church today, is if we're coming to have a private, personal worship experience with God, we've missed something. That's why prophecy is so important. That's why encouraging one another is so important. Praying for one another. It's not just about a one, you know, like me and Jesus are having our own personal party and nobody else is invited. It's a communal thing. It's a group thing. Oh, man, I could go on about Revelation forever. I love it. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and the Lamb will be with his in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. That's our future. That's the future of the church. So what do we see when we see the church? Let's come back to our wall. Now, I want to suggest that the extra bit at the top that we can aim for is church as the redeeming family of God. Church as the redeeming family of God. And let's look at those three themes that I threw at you right at the start, if you remember. We had the theme of family. And I don't know, some of you have joined the church in the last couple of years. We looked at our values just before COVID, and some of you weren't around at that time, so you may not be aware of this, but these are our church values at King's House. So our values are honor, generosity, acceptance, encouragement, and being a family. So this is actually one of the five things that we've said we want this to be in our DNA, in our culture. This is what we want to be about and known for as a church. And it means that we're going to have to get rid of a culture of individualism, which I've just described to you. Me and Jesus in our own personal, private relationship. When we get saved, when we get brought into the family of God, we've got a vertical relationship with the Father, but we've also got a horizontal relationship. It's the vertical and the horizontal, and they're actually linked. Probably the best example I can give is from the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us as we have forgiven others. The vertical and the horizontal are linked because it's one family, our brothers and sisters and our relationship with the Father. So one thing that this does is it breaks the culture of individualism. You know, until probably the last few hundred years, humanity primarily understood ourselves as being part of a tribe or part of a group, part of something bigger, basically. And then we had the Enlightenment. And since then, lots of other things came in terms of culture and art and politics and stuff. But one thing that really changed is we start seeing ourselves as individuals rather than as part of a group. And we need to get back to the normal way of understanding human existence, I would suggest, which is seeing ourselves as part of something bigger. Restored relationships. We've looked at the way in which the fall has broken human relationships and stretched them, and we see the strain of that in our own life. So we use this phrase in this sermon series, you may have noticed, the redeemed redeeming. So we believe that we have been redeemed by God, right? And a consequence of that is that we participate in redemption. We can redeem others. We can tell them the good news. And we can participate in God's healing activity, actually beyond the walls of the church, in our workplaces, in our places where we go shopping, in our friendships, all around Perth and beyond. So if we think that church is a place where people can find love and acceptance, and it is, and it should be, we ought to be modeling that in our own lives. And that's the challenge. That we don't just see, we don't just want to redeem our own relationships inside the church, we actually want to redeem human relationships outside of that. Which brings me on to community and belonging. Because many of you know that I work for an organization called Safe Families. And this is actually everything I brought you today, sneakily, in a very surreptitious way, is actually what you could call Safe Families theology. It's really the theology of the church. But it's the theology of belonging. And one of the things that I did when I started my new job is we spent an afternoon actually looking at the theological underpinnings from the Bible of why we do what we do, which I think is, I didn't mind getting paid for that afternoon. And Safe Families actually, initially, when we started it, the aim was we want to stop kids going into care and we want to keep kids with their parents. And that's still basically what we do. But we had a time a few years ago before I started where we went back to the drawing board and we said, what is the actual reason why we exist? And we decided that the reason why we exist is actually to create community and belonging. When you've got a family which is in isolation, in despair, in hopelessness, we want to put someone in their life, a volunteer, a family friend, who can come alongside them, support them, encourage them, cheer them on, and more than anything else, let them know that they're not alone. And that's all about being seen. That's all about knowing that you're heard. It's all about being known for who you are. It's a relationship of belonging. And you know, we live in an isolated society, and more as you go down the generations, we're on screens and we're isolated and we're disconnected and we live in a lonely world and a world which is starved of relationship, community, and belonging. And that is what God wants to use us for in the church. Now, some of you are thinking, oh, well, this is all right for you, Matt. I find this really difficult. In which case, I would say, join the club, because I actually really... I'm quite unhappy that I've spoken on this today, because I do try and practice what I preach, and I hate that I have to now try and do this and follow this more and more, because I said to you before, I was self-isolating before COVID came along. Like, if I've got a day off, I can spend the whole day on Netflix, I can spend the whole day on football, on other things, and not leave the house and not see anyone. So I am like a borderline hermit. Introvert slash hermit. And so it's kind of ironic in some ways that I'm bringing this message and that I'm part of an organization which is trying to bring belonging to people. It doesn't mean it's easy. Like, I struggle with this so much. I'm so challenged by everything that I've brought to you today. I really struggle with it. But I've also experienced the benefits of being part of a church family, where I am known and I do belong. And, you know, that motivates me, even though I'm not particularly good at it, I would say, to actually want to come alongside people, to actually want to know people in the church, that church isn't something you go to, church is something you're part of. So, I mean, I've got all sorts of suggestions of what that can mean on a practical level. I mean, I think it's things like seeing Sunday mornings as more than just your own time with God. It means hanging around for coffee. It means making it your business to speak to everyone in the church, not just the people who are the same age as you or people that you're friends with naturally. I've put the 4-week rule, which I hate that I've said this. You know, if you're in church for 4 weeks, make it. Try and get at least a 1-minute conversation with everyone in that time. And if that's too ambitious, make it the 6-week rule. Whatever works for you, but go beyond the boundaries of what you'd be comfortable with. Prioritize church time in your schedule. And, you know, I was thinking this in terms of COVID, when we said schools are going to be the last places to close and the first places to open back up. I wonder if we could think about church like that in our diaries and our calendars. I don't mean, by the way, that we just go into legalism and we go into, I've not gone to church enough, because that's also what the world thinks that church is. It's like you got to tick a box, right, that you're going to this community. We don't fall into feeling guilty for going on holiday. But we do prioritize it in our schedules. It means that we're not flaky. And again, like I want to kind of bring this, but it's hard because I don't want it to be condemning. But like when we have prayer meetings, like Colin and Mary, like you guys are always there. Jane, you're always there. I just want to honor you for that. And I don't always see that in myself or in my own generation, that same commitment to church time. And I think one of the reasons is, like, my generation, you like something, and then if you don't want it anymore, you just unlike it, you unsubscribe. And everything is low commitment. So this thing of being devoted to something which you're committed to, whether you're, you know, whether it's good for you or whether you want to do it or not, like, that is actually deeply countercultural. But that's what the church is. It means that we spend time with each other outside of Sundays and hubs. We invite people around for dinner. It means we're committed to one church where we can be known and have strong relationships. I mean, this is just start for 10. The implications of this are really, really endless. And we're gonna explore this more in the next few weeks. Julian and Tom are gonna speak some more on the church. But yeah, I just wanna give you that challenge. Do you see the church as something that you're part of, something where you're part of a family, where you're part of redeeming human relationships, and where you are part of a community where you can be known? Cool. Tom, do you want to come?
Well, that was fantastic, Matt. Well done. Really brilliant. What a great oversight of the purposes of God throughout.